Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Needs Some Introduction. As usual, I'm your host, Victor, and in today's episode, I will be recapping the latest episode of The Boys, episode 6 of season 3, Herogasm. And after that, stay tuned for a conversation I had with a friend of mine, Ray, who has also seen this season of Obi-Wan Kenobi and is a much bigger fan of the show than I was. He was pretty happy about it. And we get into a discussion, and you may have heard my episode yesterday or 2 days ago, where I wasn't that enthusiastic about that finale and that season in general. And honestly, he agrees with a lot of my critiques, but makes the case for seeing the bright side and the strongest elements of that show. He's also a much bigger Star Wars fan than I am, so he picked up on a lot more Easter eggs that I did not notice. And that comes after the Boys recap. I was originally going to review The Black Phone here as well, and I was looking forward to this for numerous reasons. I'm a fan of Ethan Hawke. I'm a fan of Scott Derrickson, who directed this film based on a Joe Hill novel, Joe Hill being Stephen King's son. And there is a serious Stephen King vibe here, very retro 80s feel to all of Stephen King's works. And Joe Hill doesn't always map this closely to Stephen King's output. But in this case, there is a lot of similarities. And I think that probably will boost the success of the film, given the fact that, you know, just to name some things recently, the It films, and of course Stranger Things, which also rely on that kind of retro 80s tone. And this is in that mold, and I'll probably get into a bigger discussion of this with my sister once we regroup and start discussing, or continue discussing, The Old Man, the Jeff Bridges spy thriller that's on FX, because she'll be watching it this weekend. My nephew's very much looking forward to seeing this film. I thought it was just okay. There are some things about it that are very strong, and I was rooting for the film because I was very interested in a lot of the talent behind the screen here, and of course Ethan Hawke as well, who gives a good performance, but in my opinion, just don't really discover that much about this villain character that he's playing. And it's rare that he plays a villain, by the way. So I'll have a broader discussion about that. But for me, it wasn't that much to talk about, to be honest. Not that it's bad. I think if you like that type of thing, if you're a Stranger Things fan, if you like Stephen King novels, or Joe Hill novels, obviously, you'll probably enjoy this. For me, it was just all right. It probably will appeal mostly to teenagers in the same way that Stranger Things, and honestly, even It, which is rated R, probably its core audience would probably be teenagers. And this is pretty grisly stuff. This like child abduction, murder, serial killer story is on paper very grisly, but in execution really does feel like it almost could be a teen movie. And honestly, the R rating is probably more for subject matter than it is for any kind of graphic violence, because there's not that much. Anyway, take that mini review and do with it as you will. I don't think I'd sway people one way or the other in that regard. And I'm not that enthusiastically on one side of the fence or the other on this one. Next week, Sona will be returning to the show, and we will have our first conversation in quite some time discussing the second season of Only Murders in the Building, which we'll be cover for a few weeks until the return of Better Call Saul, which we will be covering until its completion. Make sure you subscribe so you know when those episodes become available. If you'd like to support the show, give us a rating or a review on your podcatcher of choice. Drop us an email, needsomeintroduction@gmail.com. And as always, recommend this to your friends and family if you enjoy the content.
This whole place. I'm so fucking tired of listening to people tell me I need to be shitty in order to win. Fuck you. Fuck Homelander and fuck Vought and this whatever it takes crap. You're just gonna end up sitting on top of this steaming pile of shit that you built. I'm done. I'm fucking done. I'm not doing it anymore.
You're not gonna be doing anything if Homelander kills you.
Yeah, maybe. But then I'll know I'm not working with a fucking nut job. So either pop my head or get the hell out.
So we've arrived at episode 6 of season 3 of The Boys, Herogasm. And we get a lot of the things that I was expecting to see, and some surprising things I was not expecting to see. Some things we should never see, to be honest. The episode opens pretty hilariously with The Deep doing his version of the Imagine video that we saw during the pandemic. A lot of celebrities make cameos here in this video. Pretty entertaining stuff. Obviously a reference to the Gal Gadot, Mark Ruffalo, and all Imagine video. And there are three storylines. Some of them converge, some of them do not, but I'll focus on them separately. In one storyline, we see that Kimiko has been abducted from the hospital. Frenchie was already kidnapped last episode. And we see that he is being tortured by little Annie. And he has to make a Sophie's choice between whether Kimiko dies or his former girlfriend. Eventually, even without her powers, Kimiko turns out to be quite a survivor and brutally murders her captors with the help of this former girlfriend. But little Annie escapes. Kimiko is not superhuman, but boy, she can take a beating and she can also survive like this, her stitches being torn back open again. She's one tough cookie. There is a nice scene here towards the end of the episode where she comes to terms with the fact that she always thought it was the V that turned her into this brutal killer, but she turns out to be a very effective killer on her own. And she feels bad about this, this dark part of her personality. But in reality, they would have all been dead right now if it hadn't been for her skills. So she shouldn't feel too bad about it. Separately, another storyline we have going on here is A-Train, who maybe died in this episode, potentially. He's very upset about the fact that his brother's been paralyzed by Blue Hawk, and he wants his revenge. And it doesn't go well. And most of these storylines do end up culminating at what is called Herogasm, which apparently is an annual orgy where all superheroes can give into all of their different proclivities. And we get to see quite a lot of superhero, computer-generated superhero sexual activity, which isn't really as funny as I thought. I mean, I really thought we were going to see some pretty entertaining stuff. I feel like there was maybe a little bit of a failure of imagination here, or maybe the show has just been so over the top previously, it really can't top itself. And of course, in parallel as well, we have our anti-heroes, Huey and Butcher and Soldier Boy, who are on this murder mission to find out who set him up originally and allowed him to get captured by the Russians. It appears for all intents and purposes at this point that it was Noir that did this, which is ironic because Noir got the worst of it when that assault occurred back in Bolivia. Was it Bolivia? Or am I confusing this with Barry now? Nicaragua. That's when he got disfigured by that explosion. But once he hears that Soldier Boy is officially back and he's starting to murder his old teammates, Noir makes an exit for it. Pretty funny, by the way, to cut out his tracker chip and leave it in the elevator with whoever just happened to be standing there at the time. So we don't know where Noir is. Although now that I'm thinking about it at this moment, it is possible that since Noir abducted Maeve and is holding her somewhere, he may actually be heading out to team up with Maeve, because maybe he has a plan, a superhero team up to take out Soldier Boy. I mean, he did take him out once. We don't know how exactly. That's a mystery that remains to be solved. But who else could he be aligning himself with? Obviously not Homelander. Obviously nobody else knows where he is. And we don't know where Maeve is. So maybe he is going to bust out Maeve and cut a bargain with her. It turns out his next target is the TNT twins. And as everyone starts to converge there, we see that Starlight and MM are heading there. And of course, Butcher and Soldier Boy are heading there to question the TNT twins. And I mean, really, Soldier Boy wants to murder them. And of course, Homelander, knowing this, is headed there himself to do battle with Soldier Boy. Some interesting things happen on the lead up, however. One is that MM is dead set on using a gun or something on Soldier Boy and or Homelander, which continues to be a huge problem. Butcher has drugged him initially, knocked him out of the scene, took him out of the situation last week, because it's basically suicide for MM, and it honestly is suicide. And I don't understand. He literally goes at Soldier Boy at one point here with a gun, as if that's going to do anything at all. We do have a decent scene when Starlight and MM are in the car together, and he explains what happened the night that his family was killed by Soldier Boy, and that he still has that fear inside. Nonetheless, hey, this is a really, really bad idea, okay, MM? Also, in this lead-up, we see that, and this is a big thing that's going to pay off at the end of this particular episode, but the seeds are planted early on, is that we see Victoria talking to Starlight and basically admits that she knows that everybody has discovered that she is the head popper and tries to convince Starlight to use her star power to work with her, that there's some good they can do. Once again, this is Starlight's going in position at the beginning of the season, that she can do some good from working inside of the system. And she finally just stands up to Victoria and says, look, go ahead, pop my head off, or leave me alone. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to play your games. I'm out. And we really don't know just how out she is until the end of the episode, which I'll get around to, but I was actually very satisfied by this situation at the end of this episode. Another interesting thing we see here, although it's kind of a little cheap because we've never seen this interaction before, we see Homelander for the first time afraid of whether he can actually take out Soldier Boy or not. And he has this interesting interaction where he's talking to another version of himself and laying out a lot of the neuroses that we've seen in the show.
Why the long face, Tiger?
What if I can't handle him? I mean, if Noir ran...
Oh, you can handle him. You're the top of the food chain.
Hey. When we were kids, alone in the bedroom, I got us through it, right? Don't I always?
Always. No matter what.
And now, I'll get us through this, just as long as you and me stick together.
What if Edgar's right? What if it was a mistake to take over Vaughn, and I am just talented, and they all know I'm a fraud?
Now, what do you care what a bunch of mud people think? Come on. Tell me the real reason. I want to hear you say it. Say it!
Want them to love me.
Yahtzee!
Only it never seems to work out, does it? Madeline, Maeve, Stormfront, even your own son. So why do you keep running headfirst into the same brick wall?
I don't know. Pants on fire, you know. It's because deep down, there's a part of you that is still human.
No. Part of you is. A dirty, shriveled, anemic little part of you that still mules for approval and love and a mommy and a daddy and a boo-woo-woo. Look at me, Tiger. Look at me. We gotta cut that part of you out like a cancer. And then, well then, my boy, you can finally be who you were always meant to be. Pure. Clean. Like marble.
I honestly don't really like this interaction because it really just makes plain what we already know. Like, we already know he's scared. You can see it on his face. This performer does a really great job here. In general, as Homelander, like, so detestable, but like a really great villain. You see what a terror he is. And simultaneously, you see all of his insecurities. We really don't need to have this kind of internal monologue made manifest for any real reason. And also another thing that bothers me about it a little bit is that we've never seen him have this kind of interaction with this version of himself. So I'm really not sure if I buy all this. And it's a little too on the nose. But the performance is solid, and it's interesting to hear him just talking to himself in this dual role, basically saying that you need to surrender that last bit of humanity inside of yourself to become what you really are, which once again is something that we have been aware of in this show throughout its run. We really don't need to have it put right out there like that. At least I don't really need to. Unfortunately, everyone's trying to get to the TNT twins, and it just happens to be the day or weekend. Is this a weekend? It could be a whole weekend event. It's Herogasm. And what do we see here? Nothing too, like I said, it's really not as much fun. Really, I'm not going to describe all the different sex acts we see here, but it's really not that exciting. It's really not that outlandish. I mean, it's ridiculously outlandish, but there's nothing really that sticks in the mind except for what Deep is doing. And you should just watch that. He has found a new octopus / lover. Oh, by the way, there is a disclaimer at the beginning of this episode about, I assume, the sex act against what would be, theoretically, a non-willing participant animal, but it's just special effects. Yes, people, it's just special effects. I don't know if we need a disclaimer, unless a disclaimer in and of itself was a joke. There's so many disclaimers on every show I watch nowadays, I think they might have been insincere, but hey, maybe this is just a meta joke by the boys, which would not be out of character at all. And then a whole bunch of really interesting things happen here at the end. As I mentioned in last week's recap, I had predicted that I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a preliminary battle in this episode, and then everybody has to kind of take their punches, literally, and then regroup for what is inevitably going to be a much bigger battle royale once everybody's done regrouping in their corners and licking their wounds. And that's exactly what we get. Huey has gone and made the rounds within Herogasm, naked, of course, because he can basically teleport, and he loses his clothes in the process. So it just blends in. Interestingly, he runs into A-Train, however, and his anger gets the better of him, and he says to A-Train that he never apologized for killing his ex-girlfriend. And A-Train, now who's been personally injured by another soup, earnestly tells him, I'm sorry that happened to you. And he still gets slugged by Huey, by the way. He's shocked by this, of course, because he knows that Huey's not supposed to have superpowers, but the punch actually hurts. So the V is making Huey extra aggressive. This has led to multiple arguments now between him and Starlight, and potentially a breakup, or at least a temporary breakup, at the end of this episode. Soldier Boy has forgotten multiple times now what his trigger was in Manhattan, this Russian pop music that was probably playing on the radio during his torments. And apparently he blacks out when he detonates this way. And it happens again. Some music's playing on the radio, and as he's questioning the TNT twins, very funny, they try their powers for the first time in a very long time, and it just fizzles out right before they are completely incinerated by Soldier Boy's powers. But it's not just them. It takes out most of the building, and many people are injured. As a matter of fact, we find out 12 superheroes and civilians were killed in the explosion. And many, many more were injured. In the midst of all of this, Homelander arrives. Homelander sees Butcher and Soldier Boy together. He's overcome his fear of confronting Soldier Boy, or at least presents himself that way. And he basically tells Butcher that their temporary truce is over. And he strikes him down with his laser eyes and assumes that Butcher is dead, of course. And then goes hand to hand with Soldier Boy. And there's a lot of ego here on the line, by the way. Who is the true alpha dog?
You were my hero growing up. I watched all your movies hundreds of times. You were the only one that was nearly as strong as me.
Buddy, you think you look strong? You're wearing a cape. You're just a cheap fucking knockoff.
Oh, no, no, no.
I'm the upgrade.
And initially, Soldier Boy catches Homelander off guard and really knocks him about. But Homelander gets the better of him, only for Butcher, of course, to get up and use his laser eyes. And they have a laser eye battle at one point. And they are basically tag teaming on Homelander. Even Huey gets in on the action, and at one point they finally have Homelander pinned to the ground. And just as, for some reason, I guess because he just discharged just moments before, it takes a very long time for Soldier Boy to recharge. You know, there's performance anxiety too, guys. You know, it's what happens sometimes. And just as he's about to discharge, Homelander escapes and flies off. In the aftermath of all this chaos, Atreus runs into Blue Hawk again, and he finally just can't take it anymore. He grabs Blue Hawk and just runs with him. So he finally runs. He's not supposed to run anymore. It could destroy his heart. And he goes full speed. And this is unlike the Herogasm, which is a little less shocking than expected. This is pretty grotesque. He basically runs, dragging Blue Hawk behind him until he's obviously very, very dead. But then he collapses, and we hear his heart racing and racing and then stopping. So potentially, in that silence, we hear the birds again. A-Train may be dead. This might be the last of A-Train. I have a feeling it's not over yet. I have a feeling he's coming back. But if they do kill him off here, this isn't a terrible way to leave him. We'll see. Deep runs off with his sex partner in a bag. And then at the very end of the episode, we see Homelander with a bruised face, by the way. So those Soldier Boy punches have left him bruised, lacking a lot of confidence now. He's very concerned, A, that he may not be invulnerable, and B, that maybe all his power this whole entire time was in the fact that, yes, he could beat anyone one-on-one. But 3, 4, 5, there's many, many who hate him. And by the way, what happened to Soldier Boy? His entire team turned on him. So is he in store for Soldier Boy's same fate yet again? And then maybe the biggest shock of the whole entire show is something that was just in plain sight for multiple episodes now, was Starlight using her huge follower base, this hundreds of millions of people who think she's America's sweetheart, and weaponizing it. She turns on the camera, or has MM turn on the camera, and record as she says, I'm quitting the team. They're going to tell you this didn't happen, but look, it happened. Here's proof of it.
I'm in Montpelier, Vermont. 12 heroes and civilians are dead. A lot more are wounded. Now, Homelander and Vought are going to tell you that it was the supervillain and that they have it handled. They don't. It was Soldier Boy. I know I sound insane, but Soldier Boy doesn't care about protecting Americans, and he probably never has. Most heroes don't care about you. They only care about their image, and Homelander is the worst of them. He's hurt people. He's done something to Maeve. I don't know what they're gonna do to me for telling the truth, but I'm going to keep doing it, and I should have done it sooner. I'm sorry. And one more thing, I'm not Starlight anymore. My name is Annie January, and I fucking quit.
So yeah, I never saw this potential twist coming, and I really do enjoy it, this possibility that she could somehow win, in a way, by weaponizing her own popularity against this, like, brutal dictator, basically. And all she has to do is tell the truth. Now, is it all going to go smoothly for her? I don't know. And I honestly don't know where the show goes at this very moment. There's definitely going to be another battle royale in two more episodes. We're only two episodes away from the finale. So I would predict in episode 8, we see that big final. I still very much want to see Homelander lose his power. I have a little less confidence that that's going to be the twist now, given what's happened in this particular episode. I really don't hope that Homelander ends up in an even better position at the end of this. I really want to see him get some kind of comeuppance. And I really would love to see him lose his powers. That would be the worst thing that could happen to him. Even worse than death, by the way. And it seems like, given the fact that that is Soldier Boy's power, or one of his powers, I really want to see that happen. What do I predict for next week? I guess we're going to find out what actually happened with Soldier Boy, because, of course, ideally everybody wants to dispose of Soldier Boy and Homelander at the same time. Not sure if you replace Homelander with Soldier Boy, things end up in a better spot. So we'll see how they can handle the Soldier Boy problem. I have a feeling that Noir and Maeve and their interactions next week will probably reveal some of that plan. And meanwhile, we'll see the fallout of what happens from the standpoint of Vought and Homelander in the aftermath of Starlight kind of coming out with everything that's been going on. All right, so that's the episode. I liked it. Didn't like it as much as last week. It is kind of a middle episode. Every superhero confrontation needs to have like that first battle royale, and then a regroup and a second attempt again for the true final battle. This is pretty cliched and expected, and they were able to throw it in throw a superhero orgy in there for extra entertainment, a little extra seasoning there in the recipe. So it was fine. But I'm very curious at this moment what happens in the next episode. I'm kind of not certain, although I would very much expect to see another battle royale at the end of the season. And we'll see what is the power reset at the end of season 3. And I do think there will be some kind of power shift. Okay, so that's the Boys recap. And now let me get into the conversation I had with Ray about Obi-Wan Kenobi and really all things Star Wars. All right, hope you enjoy the conversation, and I'll talk to you soon. All right, so we haven't spoken. We've texted, but we have not spoken, I think, since probably the Loki conversation last year, right?
That would be correct. Yeah, I've been busy with work and family stuff, and I know you have too. And to be honest, Disney has just produced so many things, it's hard to keep up.
It's impossible, right?
I know.
It's funny too, because it's just like even me just like picking things to cover. And I'm not doing Ms. Marvel, although I have been enjoying it. And me and Nick have just like, you know, we've dipped into it and just made very brief mention of it on the podcast. But, you know, you have Andor and She-Hulk are coming on at the exact same time, like literally the same week. There's the Big Hero 6, if you want to be a completist. They have an animated show starting like next week. And Andor is not a six episode show. It's a 13 episode show. And they already have a second
season shot. So it's like, you know, it's there's just way too much content coming out, I think.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know they could squeeze that much out of Andor. That's interesting.
Yeah. And it may very, very much concerns me. Maybe that's a direction we go in the conversation. Before we get into that, I do want to get your review, obviously, for the season of Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I did tease on the last episode, yesterday's episode, where I did my hot take, which was hot and not very positive.
Very hot. Yeah. right off the press. But you get up at 5 a.m. to watch it, or
I did watch it in the morning and I posted it right around lunchtime. So I did mention in there that, you know, I wanted to have somebody come in and have a different perspective, because Nick, you know, when he was covering it with me, was pretty negative as well on those early episodes. Although I have texted him and he did also like the finale. So I do want to get
come around a bit. So that's what I hear.
The last episode was better too, for sure. I mean, of the I'll get into that in a second, but I did want to get a review of the season. But before we get into that, I did want to get just a feel for where you're at with the Star Wars franchise in general, you know, obviously, but just on the Disney Plus front. My two friends that are the biggest Star Wars fans, like, they were first online to see even The Phantom Menace and are still apologists for The Phantom Menace. They, and I did not see it, so I can't speak to it, they hated the Boba Fett show. They hated it. So I was wondering, where were you on that?
Well, I mean, as a whole, I could tell you, I like to think of Star Wars as a restaurant where maybe not everything on the menu is up for you and what you like. And you kind of a la carte pick the things you like. And there's going to be things on that menu you don't like. And I think with these series, you're getting a small sampling of just part of the menu. So it can give you some bad taste for a good portion of the show if there's nothing that you like that's on the menu. I mean, you see it almost in every Star Wars movie. Yeah. There's something that the Star Wars fan doesn't like. So I think that's part of the whole Star Wars universe. To be honest, I don't understand the venom of the fans for this series in particular. Mm-hmm. I feel that, you know, it's one of those things where maybe the best analogy would be if you're on a roller coaster at Great Adventure and you're not commenting on every turn and curve. Oh, the engineers should have changed this. It should have been more fun. Just enjoy the ride. Just enjoy the ride. That this is someone, obviously, I'm that original New Hope fan. Mm-hmm. I was 7 years old when I saw it. Luckily, my father loves Star Wars, so we went to go see it once a week, usually on a Sunday. We'd wait in line. I probably saw the original over 20 times in the movie theater because he loved it so much. He loved Star Wars. And, you know, then you had Empire, and then there was a big gap. It was a three-year gap before you got Return of the Jedi. And Return of the Jedi caught a lot of other people that maybe were casual fans, and then that was it.
Yep.
Period. You know, the only thing else you had for Star Wars material, you had a couple of novels. One was Splinter in the Mind's Eye, which was the original sort of sequel to Star Wars if Harrison Ford didn't sign on and stuff. And that was actually a manuscript, you know, it was a screenplay that they eventually turned into a novel. And I think another one was called like Han Solo at Star's End. Small novels, but you ate them up because you had this material. And then that was it. There's a huge drought of Star Wars material until, I'd say probably it was until, the original CD-ROM game, the Dark Forces, which was like a first-person Doom-type shooter where you actually saw Stormtroopers again and some kind of a Star Wars story. So, you know, I can look at a time when you were so starved for any kind of content to now where we're just overloaded with content.
Yeah, you're drowning. It's
like, so I think you have to appreciate what they put out. It is going to be varied. I mean, I just can't underestimate how much they do borrow from the expanded universe and just take it, make it their own ideas, similar to how Marvel does with the original comics, but they mix and match stories. Like, for instance, you know, Boba Fett, I thoroughly enjoyed the first couple episodes of Boba Fett. Mm-hmm. I did not necessarily enjoy the end, the last two episodes. The middle, I thought was great. It was Mandalorian 2.2. right. But what's interesting is there is a book, Kenobi, in the expanded universe, which basically describes Obi-Wan's time from Revenge of the Sith to A New Hope. and it really fills in the gap. They borrow heavily on Boba Fett, in particular, Book of Boba Fett and Mandalorian, because this novel is a Western with Obi-Wan as the main character.
Yeah.
And he basically goes around saving villages, and it delves heavily into Tusken Raider culture, which Boba Fett did, and the whole Western concept, like things in the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I mean, they took right out of that novel. So when they decided to make Kenobi, I was very interested in seeing what they would do, because they already used a lot of the Kenobi ideas in other series. So.
Right. Yeah. And maybe that's why I don't want to put my thumb on the scale, but I felt like they had very little story to tell, and they kind of dragged it on for six episodes, basically. And
they had to put some filler for Mandalorian in there. Even,
much filler.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're generally positive on it.
I think it was rooted in reality about all the events that unfolded with Obi-Wan. And I think the PTSD for some people was just too woke, like, oh, this is my hero, I can't see him like this. But I mean, Disney has a tendency to do this with some of their characters, is really make them as low as possible in their life to then rise up, you know, sometimes rather quickly. And you can see that with this series too. Yeah, he goes from barely able to move a bolt to
you can't knock over a can of soda back, and all of a sudden he can keep the ocean out. It's like pretty
extreme. So, you know, again, all these things are with some reservations. You know, I tried to avoid all these plot holes that people keep talking about, and you use that old, in a certain point of view, when you watch all Star Wars movies, because they're all come into play like that. And honestly, I like how the series wrapped up a lot of some of these plot holes that people were claiming that they would have now, and how they worked in the dialogue to actually explain away some of the New Hope stuff. But the directing was the part that I was most disappointed with. Deborah Chow, it's just a different look than, with Filoni or Favreau would do. I would love to see what they would have done with this, with the visuals and the angles. That was a little off at times. It almost gave me a Blair Witch Project kind of feel at times. And I don't know. That was a little unsettling. But
she did a lot of Mandalorian, though. Isn't she the main Mandalorian?
She had
director?
Some episodes, too. Yeah, yeah. You know, they borrowed heavily from video games, too. I mean, the Jedi Fallen Order. That fourth episode was basically Jedi Fallen Order. Right? All the scenes where Cal Kestis sneaks in exactly the same way. And also, if you played that video game, or in my case, my son played it, you kind of know what's going to happen almost. So it was interesting.
Well, yeah. I kind of knew what was going to happen in this show, given the framework of it as well. Right.
So that's another. But I just love how people just, they hate it for the plot holes. Yeah. And I always say, like, if A New Hope came out today, you guys would kill it too. I mean, there's so many things you could look at in A New Hope that doesn't really make sense. I mean, again, I'm not talking about sequel stuff where we can, you know, track people in hyperspace and all, because there's always those elements of, you have a construct of science fiction reality, and if you don't play by those rules, well, you know, you lose continuity and stuff. But, you know, like a good example is in A New Hope, right? With the Death Star trench, okay?
Right.
Why did they have to do a trench run? Couldn't they have just flown over the trench and dive bomb the exhaust port? Like, what is the explanation why they have to get in that trench? I've heard kind of weird ones that the turbo lasers would take them out, but they weren't. So what's the deal with that, right? I mean, that's a huge plot hole, right? I think the best, though, is Return of the Jedi. So they steal an Imperial shuttle, and they have the codes that they got from those Bothan spies to deactivate the shield. So they have the one little team. They play, you know, this cat and mouse. They go right up to the Star Destroyer, Darth Vader's Star Destroyer, transmit the code to deactivate the shield, only to then go down to the surface of the moon then deactivate the shield again. Like, you had the shield deactivated. Just fly into the superstructure, blow up the Death Star, right? Like, it's like, what was wrong with that plot? What was that storyline, right? So anyway, you could, you know, cut these things apart forever, but I think part of the problem was, I heard that the Kenobi series was originally going to be 8 at least. So we had the 2 bonus in the beginning, and then there were going to be 6. And then very quickly into the series, they did some editing after the first and second had already aired, because they decided to have a second season. And as a result, even some of the storyline changed, you know, to accommodate the second season. Now, that said, the finale kind of wrapped things up nicely. So right. I don't even know if I want to have a second
series. You know, we live in an internet era, so it is much harder to get away with plot contrivances that you could back in the day. Because you're absolutely right. Some of those old movies we watched are full of plot holes. Like, I mean, hey, can the Superman rolling the world backwards is pretty.
Oh, God.
That's probably the biggest. You know, you watch that now, it's a very cringy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you know what is funny, though, is I heard someone try to explain it like from a scientific point of view, like in Superman, where he does go backwards with the Earth. And it wasn't that he was necessarily making the Earth go backwards as much as just by going faster than the speed of light.
Yes.
Some kind of relativistic thing he was trying to do. Someone was trying to explain it away.
I've heard that.
The original intent. The original intent was he was literally turning the Earth backwards and turning time.
Exactly. And that's what's so crazy about it is that I've heard that, by the way, that excuse, that very excuse.
Yeah.
A very long time ago. Like, yeah, you know, when I was, right? You know, when I was a kid, I've heard that excuse. And like you said, absolutely not. The globe spins the opposite direction. And then he's able to scratch the record and like stop it. Okay, right there.
Bring it back. All right, right there. That's a spot.
Perfect. Right there. Drop the needle here. So pretty funny.
True.
But yeah, I wouldn't come back for a second season for a number of reasons. But I do agree that they kind of wrap up the storyline there. The other thing I had heard, by the way, was that they scrapped, and this is maybe some of the pain they had on the show, they scrapped their original plan. They started shooting the show, and then apparently they thought the storyline was too similar to either The Mandalorian or maybe it was also that kind of, they recycled some of those same story beats in Boba Fett. So like basically as they were in production, they're like suddenly saying like, wait a second, we can't like make another series with the same skeletal framework, right?
Oh, sure.
I think they had to redo a lot of the scripts as well. Yeah. And they almost, I think the first couple episodes were, you mentioned that they kind of got truncated. I don't think they were truncated. They completely reshot what they had started doing and they reframed the story. Like, I don't know if it was like him protecting Leia and they were like out in the desert together, which maybe felt a little bit too much like Mandalorian or something like that.
Yeah, I suppose they probably delved back into Tatooine culture with the Tusken Raiders, the Sand People. There might have been an episode where he's defending the Lars moisture farm from Sand People or bandits, and then you start saying, "Well, wait, isn't this the same thing we just rehashed in the Book of Boba Fett?" You know,
right. So, and it's only a few weeks after that. At that point,
yeah. So there might be something to that. Maybe they did use some of the source material from the Kenobi Expanded Universe novel. So, you know, it's hard to say. Even with Boba Fett, I mean, there was a short story that appeared in one of the Expanded Universe novels. It was called Tales from Jabba's Palace, where it described how Boba Fett escaped from the Sarlacc pit. And it was somewhat similar, but different. I mean, he had no idea the time that he was in there. And actually, the person who aided him was not the Sand People. It was Dengar, one of the bounty hunters in Empire Strikes Back. That was the one who helped him. And him and Dengar formed this bond very similar to like Fennec and him did. So they still borrow the stuff. They just change it around a little bit. You know, I'm not sure what direction they're going to go in with that. I think even the actor himself, Temuera Morrison, wants him to be a badass again, I think.
Yeah. I think in general, people want to see that. And I'm not saying this. I do not speak for Star Wars fandom, because that fandom could be pretty toxic, to be honest with you. And I just speak, you know, as more of a casual viewer and also just kind of someone who's frustrated to parallel. I always parallel them to Marvel. Marvel throws everything in there, like including the kitchen sink. And they somehow are able. And by the way, the vast majority of those movies, I have to tell you that even some of the really successful ones, I give them barely a thumbs up. They develop their characters really well. So you really look forward to seeing those characters in better movies, you know, inevitably. Mm. What I find frustrating with the Star Wars films, and it's not just Obi-Wan. I think at this point, the reason some of my takes have been so hot is that it is just an overall frustration with what they've done with the franchise, that they are unable with this unbelievable IP that some of these, like you said, these comic books, these video games, these novels have pretty interesting stories to tell. And the idea that, for example, once again, it's almost the same argument I can make with what they did with the last Skywalker, or the Rise of Skywalker, I should say, that, here we have Obi-Wan Kenobi, and it's the idea of saying, you know, go the Better Call Saul route of doing a prequel. We have Obi-Wan. People love Obi-Wan. People can't wait to see Obi-Wan. What is he doing? Introduce new characters that we care about. So there's actual dramatic stakes. Like, is that person going to die? Right. I mean, in this finale, there are multiple times that I excerpted in my recap, if anyone wants to check that out. It's yesterday's episode, I should say, that there are moments where the music is building, like, oh my God, Obi-Wan Kenobi's going to die. I'm like, he's not going to die. Like, what are you talking about? None of these characters can die. Like, what is, and you have multiple scenes, parallel action going back and forth, where Owen's life is in danger. You know, is Darth Vader going to die, or Obi-Wan going to die? Is Luke going to die? You know, is Owen, his uncle, going to die? It's like, none of those people can die. Like, where is the tension here? You know, and for me, that's the frustration. It's this, once again, not even the quality of the individual episode, like that lightsaber battle is actually very cool, very beautiful to look at. Right. And the performances are very strong in those moments. And even Reva, I did not like her performance. And I predicted from the very beginning of my recaps going, like, she's going to have a pivot. And she's going to be better at that other role. And that's exactly what ended up happening.
Yep.
She was very good in those scenes. Mm-hmm. And anyway, all those things are all true. But I just feel like, wow, what a failure of imagination that you can't just go and, like, literally just pull, like, dust off one of these old novels they have and just tell a completely different story. Like Obi-Wan Kenobi in the wild, getting into trouble, getting, you know, whatever, like kidnapped by Jawas, you know, falling in love. Maybe his wife dies or he's on the run or something. Tell me that story. I don't need to see Leia again. I don't need to see Darth Vader right away. Bring Darth Vader in the second or third season. I don't need him in the second episode. It's just, that's my frustration.
No, I know. That's true. It's, they always fall back on the major characters. You feel like there's only, like, you know, 6 degrees of separation in the Star Wars universe. Everyone's together. It's like there's no
other
thing.
Throw a rock in that entire universe without hitting one of the main characters from the original franchise.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, I could tell you that in the expanded novels and the stories, you know, it was masterful. What they would do is where they would just take one stormtrooper that was, like, in one scene and just build a whole story arc around this one individual and make it all come full circle and make it work and make some sense into it, you know? And again, I think part of that is why some of the Star Wars fans don't like the Disney version, because all those expanded universe novels, they all had to be approved by George. He was a master of continuity. So these authors would have to bow down to his ultimate authority if they were going to get published. And really, they were all integrated. There was all continuity. So they were great at doing that. They were great at taking a tiny little character, a tiny little bit of time, and make a whole novel or story out.
Exactly.
You know? And I do agree that they paint themselves in a corner a bit. Rather than tension, I feel that they know that the audience knows the outcome. They just want to see how it transpires, almost like a watcher type perspective. Like, all right, I know what's happening. Now I just want to be entertained and see what happens. You know, I don't know. That's
And I agree with that. I agree with that. I'm more of my, I'm more critical of the construction of the show, where they are, you know, you just listen to the musical cues that it's like, oh my God, who's going to die now? I'm like, you could play that scene in a very different way, where it's like this confrontation, you know, for example, the original trilogy of the Star Wars, I should say the prequels, the Lucas prequels. I do not like those films, although I do like most of the third one, the
Revenge of Sith is decent. Yeah.
Right. And that scene where that brutal scene, by the way, at the end, where they have the lightsaber battle and he leaves them there to, like, burn. And he's like, how could you do this? You know, I love you. Like, you know, and, like, that scene is really tough. And you have an opportunity at this moment, same two actors, to deliver that kind of scene.
Right.
And if you set the bar at that level, I don't feel like, you know, we get Darth Vader, you bring him in. They only interact a couple of times. One time he drags him through a fire and Darth Vader gets scared off by a fire. I don't understand that at all.
Oh, I know. That was one where it was maybe just he was playing with him, knew he couldn't get away, cat and mouse thing, but then it didn't sort of hold true with the fourth episode either.
Yeah, because that is
Reva for letting him go away. You know?
Exactly. But, yeah, none of that makes any sense.
No, I know. I mean, again, even the You know, again, obviously, spoiler alert, anyone listening to this, you know, we're talking
I'll put a spoiler at the top of this whole thing. Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I kind of had a feeling we were going to get a split helmet situation.
Yes, yeah.
They had used that in with Ahsoka's fight in Star Wars Rebels, where she was able to look at his eyes, and there was a moment of contact where there was an emotional connection. And they did it this way a little different. You know, I thought, like you said, they had the potential to go a lot of different routes with this, maybe Anakin slightly turning at one point and then reverting back. You know, I thought it was nice how, you know, he did say to Obi-Wan after he apologized to Anakin for, I'm sorry, that it wasn't him. He did this to himself, you know, which was at least a little bit of Anakin talking for a moment there. So, you know, there was so much potential. I mean, he could have told him what Padme's last words to him were. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, can you imagine that? Yeah, I mean, there's lots of missed opportunity.
Yeah.
So, and not for nothing, but you know what? Like, this is a nitpick I'm going to make right now, but it's a pretty big one in my opinion in that episode. And this comes from someone who didn't appreciate it as much as you did. But at the same time, I think, okay, Obi-Wan left him to like die, and he didn't die
again.
Right? And he had no idea that he was going to turn to Darth Vader, obviously, right? But now he leaves him again without finishing. And it's just like he indirectly is responsible for millions of deaths.
Again, I know he could have finished him again. Yeah, he could have finished him again. But I think that speaks to the fact that Obi-Wan still loves him to some degree, and he cannot kill him. He cannot kill him this second time around. He can't kill him. Right. Which is interesting, because then he's imploring Luke, his own son, to kill his dad when Obi-Wan couldn't kill him, you know? So very interesting stuff. But I did think that there was going to be a little bit of him prompting him to turn, because there was that scene in Return of the Jedi after the walkers had dropped off Luke before they go to the Emperor, where they're having the conversation. And I think at one point Vader says something like, Obi-Wan once felt as you do, you know, like where there was still some good in him. So that's why I really thought they were going to go that route a little. And they kind of did it. He just apologized and he kind of let Obi-Wan off the hook. Said, don't, I get it. It's me, not you. So, you know,
it's not me. It's you. It's not you. It's not you. It's me. But I think, I mean, just to speaking of kind of the missed opportunity, I was thinking in my mind after watching this show, there are ways, like Marvel does a really good job of this, even after they put out a sucky movie and all the critics go at them and the fans are kind of disappointed, they then go and like rehabilitate that property. Mm-hmm. And there's an opportunity here, like you could imagine where they could have done some of the similar thing here. And I just think of some scenarios where, imagine where, you know, he says the last time we met, Obi-Wan, you know, I was like your...
I left you, I was but a learner, and now I am the master. That's the line he uses in A New Hope, right?
Yeah, so if you believe that in this, if this is the last time they met, unless maybe there's another one in between, that like, what does he learn in this scenario? But I do think it could have been like, imagine one scenario after watching the episode I thought of yesterday. Imagine somehow you come up, you write around the problem, you write around that dialogue, and imagine you have a situation, and I don't know what that situation would be, but you can come up with something where somehow Obi-Wan and Darth Vader have to work together, and that this is the one time that they, you know, and then of course they cannot trust each other for a second, and they have all this animosity, all this anger, you know, he'll blame, you know, Obi-Wan for killing his wife, and like, imagine the tension between the two of them.
Man.
And then of course they would inevitably have to have a lightsaber battle before it was all over.
Right.
And that could be the end of the season. And then that would like kind of work its way around the loophole, and would be an absolutely fascinating, you know, you just have to come up with a, you know, MacGuffin to get them to work together.
Right.
But that could have been
like a stranded on a planet, almost like an enemy mine kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. There are opportunities there. And I don't understand why no one could come up with something a little more.
Well, I did think they tried to mix the dialogue in for continuity. Yeah. Like for instance, you know, one of the big, you know, busts on the dialogue in A New Hope is at one point Obi-Wan just, you know, refers to him as Darth, you know, and they're like, well, man, that's not his name. Yeah. That's his, all the Sith Lords are Darth. So why would he say something like that? And so then of course on the finale, right at the end, he says, you know, something like goodbye, Darth, and walked away. So, so now you have that little continuity of, you know, reference point where he called him Darth. He says it again. You know, again, they kept referencing, you know, Obi-Wan as his previous master, you know, master versus the apprentice versus Padawan, you know, so that's sort of where I think they're trying to mix all that in. And, you know, again, if they have a second series, I don't think they can have Vader in it because they can't
have them. They kept running into each other again. Yeah, exactly.
But they've sort of now completed that arc as best as you can to fill in the dialogue. I mean, even to the point where Kenobi says to Luke, you know, how he betrayed and murdered your father, you know, for Darth Vader and Anakin. You almost see that played out more in the last episode, how he kind of tells Obi-Wan that story himself. Exactly. So now Obi-Wan's not lying as much as people were saying, you know. Right. So it's you know,
but that's like the Han Solo movie where they explain too much too. I don't mind in the original movies when, like, even as a kid when I watched those movies, and he said, you know, and by the way, Lucas did not know that. That was a plot twist that was added later. So Lucas didn't have the original Darth Vader as the father
situation. Not at all. Right.
But that in ambiguity between those two pieces of dialogue, that was great. It's like, yeah, you know, could you imagine you have to tell this kid, basically he's a kid, right? His dad is like the most evil guy. It's like, that might not be something you tell him right away. So that's just one of those things you don't say, right? Not a surprise. I mean, we all deal with that type of stuff all the time.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it was more real, honestly, like as a character beat to not tell him.
Yep. I thought that there was a like sort of a shocker surprise at the end where he says, do you want to meet him? Where he had not ever met.
Yeah, why even do that? I was so frustrated by that. I know you can now say, well, he doesn't remember meeting him. Sure, whatever. But right. I'm like, but why even put it in there? Why even mess with that? I don't
know. Well, I mean, clearly in Star Wars, the original New Hope, there was an established relationship that Luke had with Ben Kenobi. Because he even says, oh, Ben Kenobi, well, I'm glad to see you. So, you know, they must have had some history together at some point.
Or knew who he was, at least.
And he knew who he was. Right. And, you know, like even with Leia, you know, with Leia, she sends R2 to Tatooine to find him. Because
you're my only hope.
He's her only hope.
Right.
And even in the scene where Luke comes to rescue her in the detention area, you know, he finally convinces her really to go with him when he says, I'm here with Ben Kenobi. And she looks at him, Ben Kenobi, where? And like, she runs with him.
Right.
So that sort of explains how she really knew who Ben Kenobi was before, you know? So whereas other people were saying, oh, well, they got to mind, you know, race Leia. Yeah, and I'm just like, no, they don't.
That's what Nick was saying.
Yeah, no, they don't. She knows who Ben Kenobi is. And this is just trying to explain it again. It's tough to fill in all the gaps, and Star Wars again will always have these weird, you know, plot holes, you know.
and honestly, the Leia thing didn't bother me as much, even like you said, I in my mind, you know, the one thing that I think sticks in your mind obviously is, you know, help us, Obi-Wan, you're my only hope, you know, whatever. And it's like, of course, yeah, so she knows who Obi-Wan is. She's literally asking for his help, right?
Right.
So I don't have an issue with that. Like, that was much less of an issue for me than just the performance. I know she's a child actress, so
but yeah, I mean, it was a little much. I know
it was just definitely... yeah, I mean, like the fact that they try to make her this, like, you know, hyper precocious.
Precocious is an understatement almost.
and they keep saying she's 10 years old. I'm like, I swear my 7-year-old is way more mature than this 10-year-old. Like, she cannot be a 10-year-old. She, you know, they wrote her like a 5-year-old. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, that was a little weird too. The idea of the whole kidnapping scene too is a little odd.
Where she's walking casually, they can't catch her.
I mean, you mentioned the fire with Darth Vader. Oof, there's been multiple obstructions to villains in this series with their, either it's and Tatooine, where that one rogue Jedi was running away, and he
just drops the thing down.
He just drops the curtain.
A flag. Drops a flag down. How can I catch him now? There's a flag in front of him.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, we're stopped. No, we can't. And her running through the woods, and there's just one branch that they can't go under. It was, you know, that's a little
flea for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. That was flea for a moment in the
movie. Right. Yeah. Oh, flea. That was great with the throwback to Flea. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was cool. I did think that they tried with the Tala character, the one that was the Imperial Guard, you know, to build some emotion and build the character that you didn't know her fate. So there was some tension with her, you know, and they bumped her off. So at least they tried to have some characters, you know, that you kind of got to know. And
that was a good scene too, by the way. That was actually a good scene. That's probably my favorite episode, was that fifth episode.
I think she was one of the better actors or actresses in the whole series. Yep. I mean,
I agree.
It was a little preposterous, the situation she was in again. Right. I mean, they you know, how do you get into a maximum security Imperial site like that? And
oh, I mean, my God. We just walk in. That's what you do.
Again, the whole plot hole with Cal Kestis in a Jedi Fallen Order, that's exactly how he sneaks into the same Inquisitor base. So if he did it once, you think they would have some way of preventing someone else from doing it again, you know? So,
once again, this is where I think it's such bad plotting, is that you could make a joke being like, that basically she could say, because she's in the Imperial Guard, saying, oh yeah, like we could just walk in. And he's like, what are you talking about? That's like the most impenetrable fortress. Like, do you think any idiot would just walk into that place? Yeah. And then that would be the joke, that no one would even dare to walk in, right? You make a joke out of it instead of being like, there's no way to get in unless you just walk in.
Unless you just walk in.
Oh, just walk in, and just walk out with a girl under the robe and no one notices. It's just,
oh, that was just something. That's where you start getting, that's almost like the, that was almost on the same level as the crank call to Hux in the sequel series with Oscar Isaac. That was almost like Jesus. I mean, just, you know, a little cringeworthy. Now you're making me like mock on some of this stuff, but it's I just like enjoying the ride. Look, the last two episodes saved that series.
Yeah.
There are people like ready to just, you know, totally dive bomb it.
Yeah.
And there are definitely people that come around as converts for sure. You know, I give it maybe a 7.5, maybe an 8 out of 10. That would be my final, you know. But yeah, even the Darth Vader comic has great, great expanded storylines. Yeah. You know,
and they have many things. That's like, you know, speaking of how Marvel does that. And, you know, you did make a very good point that, you know, like when Disney took over, they probably weren't following that Bible as closely as the Lucasfilms folks were. Mm-hmm. But hey, they inherited that Bible, first of all. And second of all, like you said, there are many comics, there are video games out there that have very interesting ideas that aren't perfectly executed, and you can polish them up and make a series. And not only that, the thing that amazes me is when people don't learn from their successes, not from their failures. They don't learn from their successes. They went in there with the Mandalorian character. They literally said, you got to tell us a story that doesn't touch the Skywalker franchise. We can't do anything with that. You can do whatever you want, but it has to do nothing to do with anything.
Right.
And that thing, the first season of The Mandalorian, is by far the most successful thing that Disney has put on. It's bigger than the Marvel shows.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Everyone since then, the more they've been trying to tie it back into the Skywalker legacy, every time they do that, the ratings get lower and lower and lower. And they're like, you don't learn from your success. Like, what everybody wants to see is you guys go into this enormous universe and play with any one of those ideas. And they can't learn.
Right.
Capable of learning.
I think the only reason that the Luke Skywalker arc on the second season of The Mandalorian was so popular was that everyone was just dying to see Luke as an overpowered Jedi. So and it was, in a weird way, The Last Jedi set you up for that emotional return of Luke. And I'll admit I was very emotional at that scene. I cried. I cried multiple times after I watched it multiple times. Even it was so emotional for me to finally see Luke as a real Jedi and doing what we thought we were supposed to see in the sequel.
Right,
so there's at least one time where they've tried to redeem themselves in some way possible, at least, you know. And you know, even the dialogue between Obi-Wan and Anakin / Vader at the end of the finale, I got emotional with that. Definitely got emotional. They know how to pull the heartstrings of the true Star Wars fan. That's accepting anyway. Some people just will not let them in. They're just, that's it.
I mean, that is literally where I'm at now. And it's not like by intention. It's just like, you know, it's like at a certain point, it's like being in an abusive relationship. After a certain amount of time, like they can't hurt you anymore. You know, they can't hurt you.
Jesus. But I do think there might be a generational thing to it. A lot of my friends in my era, I've talked to and texted, and the general consensus is they like this series. They did, I did. So it's so that's good. Whereas, like, say my nephew, I always call my nephew the prequel generation. He grew up on the prequels.
Right.
He's down on it. He doesn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, because Obi-Wan is really his number one hero. Like they love Obi-Wan, this prequel generation. Yep. And so they didn't like seeing him with the PTSD and being depressed and cutting meat every day just to go home and feed it to his Iofi or whatever that
beast. His camel, whatever that thing was. Yeah, exactly.
So
his desert sashimi or whatever, like, I don't know what the fish are.
Yeah. After yeah. Oh, it was, I think it's a sand whale is what they were cutting.
Oh, okay.
I don't think it was a cryat dragon. It looked like a sand whale. That's again, alludes to that, you know, Tatooine once was an aquatic water world, just like they did in Boba Fett with the sand people, that one part. And, it all the seas evaporated. There's a variety of reasons in Star Wars lore why that happened. One was some sort of a alien race was invading and heated up the planet. And then it was just just ecological change, you know.
Oh, but, I didn't even know.
Yeah. So a lot of these creatures in Star Wars were once aquatic creatures that, you know, adapted to the sand. So the one is a sand whale. And I think that's what that is. And although you can't really see it, it's just a couple like spikes or fins in the sand there. So
that's actually a cool design too, that idea that they're like basically in the shade of the corpse of the thing, right? Which is pretty
cutting it up, you know. Cutting it up. But I really did feel that this was the last Jedi for that prequel generation, because they hated seeing Obi-Wan destroyed, just like we hated seeing Luke destroyed in the last Jedi,
right?
It's kind of the same thing, you know. They kind of took the same thing, but at least this time he didn't just get tired from using the Force and die. So that was good.
That's right. I got a couple of funny things from this show that I wanted to get your reaction from. And then maybe we do like a rapid fire. I just want to see other things you might have caught up on. Yeah. The first thing I was going to say is I feel a little bad for Hayden Christensen to be in this show that, you know, everybody's excited to see him. And then you see him in episode one, but he's inside that, you know, rehabilitation chamber. And then he supposedly is in the uniform, that's what they say, but I don't know if that's true, because what's his name, Pedro Pascal, is not always in the Mandalorian suit either,
right?
So I'm not sure if he would have been in the suit all that time. And then we finally see his face and he's de-aged, so it's like all special effects, although it looks great, by the way. It looks incredible.
It looked good. I liked it. Yeah, I liked that scene. That was a great scene with them sparring, you know. Yeah, that was again from Attack of Clones, you know, with the braid and everything, you know.
I actually thought it was an outtake. I was so convinced by the special effects, I thought it was an outtake. And then I'm like, no, this can't be an outtake. And then, you know, it's just the aging, which is incredible, how good it works nowadays.
Yep.
And then, of course, we do see him one last shot where we see like just that one eyeball. And I'm like, man, this guy put on a lot of prosthetics.
I know.
And did a lot of work for very little screen time.
Yep.
Oh, and the other thing I was going to say, which was a nitpick I was going to make, but it turned out to be like, I kind of ended up biting myself in the ass, but this is also very surprising. I was like, hang on a second. You're trying to tell me, okay, you know, Luke Skywalker's 10 years old. Obviously he's a twin, so he's 10 years old. If Leia's 10, he's 10. And Mark Hamill was 18 when he cast them in that movie. So we're talking about 8 years later. So you're trying to tell me like 8 years, 9 years later that this guy's going to look like Alec Guinness. I'm like, what was Alec Guinness when he made that movie? 85 years old. Now here's the funny thing about it. I looked it up and he was 63. Yes. So I was like, it is 10 years later. The math actually works. I was wrong. Yeah,
the math kind of works. I mean, I kind of remember back, like when my parents were 50, they, I don't look like they did when they were 50.
Yes,
some people say, oh, that's just you think. No, I really do feel that people do not age as bad as they used to. They're better, healthier. They're not doing all these things. And I think the opposite is true. I think younger kids look a little older now than they did when we were kids, you know? So there's sort of this merger of everyone around the same age.
Everybody looks the same age forever.
Yeah. I mean, I thought they were going to somehow explain that with maybe he does bump into the Emperor and he gets a little force lightning and makes him older quicker. I thought that maybe that was one way.
Be living in the desert, man. That sun will age you.
Well, that's the other thing. The twin sons is hard on life, you know, because even
Beru
and Owen, they don't look that much older, you know, compared to 10 years from that too.
Absolutely. Right? Exactly. Yeah, that's true. Right. That's true.
And then there was even some trope. Someone was saying that everybody on Tatooine ages differently, almost like a gravity type thing, like on Interstellar where they're close to the black hole. So it's a relativistic thing again, where if you live on Tatooine, it's not exactly correlates the same years in other planets. So that's why you age more.
That's a lot of work to do.
But it's a lot of work to explain it away.
It's a lot of work, but basically what it comes down to is that probably Alec Guinness drank and smoked too much back in his day. And Ewan McGregor, I think, is a vegetarian, so he's probably going to live to be 120.
I honestly thought they were going to gray his beard more. to make
They actually should have aged him up a little bit because he has not aged in like 10 years. So.
No, especially when he was starting at the end where he was getting his mojo back and he was combing his hair now again. It's like, he doesn't look that much different now than he did.
It's like he did 17 years ago. Exactly.
Right. There is a scene in Star Wars Rebels where Ezra, which is the force sensitive character, meets up with him in the desert. And there's actually a standoff between him and Darth Maul. And they have him sort of aged in between this and A New Hope, where he's mostly gray, but not totally. So, I mean, maybe they're trying to go on that set because again, there's a lot of stuff in Rebels that ties in with this, with the Inquisitors and all.
Right.
Even the Grand Inquisitor, getting stabbed. Everyone's like, what? This is impossible. He can't be stabbed because he's in Star Wars Rebel as the main protagonist. So how does he get stabbed and he's not alive? Wait a minute.
I love that performance, by the way. Rupert Friend was hilarious in that role.
He did great. He did great. He did a good job. No, it's good, man. It's looking forward to Andor, and I'm gonna check out Miss Marvel, and definitely gonna try to see Top Gun and the Jurassic World. Those are my next ones. So
how about Thor? You gonna see the Thor movie?
Oh yeah, that'll be great. That'll be a nice little, at this point, nostalgic tour for Marvel because right. He's the only guy left, and who knows, they'll probably bump him off too. So that's the end of the big three. Yeah. That'll be it.
It depends on what his contract negotiations are.
I've heard mixed things. I would love to see a cameo from Loki again, though. And yes, we'll see if that appears.
Well, we're definitely going to see Loki again. So
yes.
And they're maybe shooting in that movie. Shooting the second season. So we look forward to that. They're predicting by the end of the year. So we look forward to that. For sure.
Good. That'll be a good series. I did see a graphic the other day of how many things they have planned. And it's just amazing how much they do have there. It's unbelievable. And most of them look like series more than movies, it looks like. So
maybe try to check out Thor sometime over the holiday, or I guess it's after the 4th of July. But if you catch it quick, maybe we'll get together, me, you, and Nick, and we'll be
sure. Absolutely. Anytime, man. It's always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure.
Good talking.
All right, Victor. Take care, man.
Take care. Talk to you soon.